Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight, the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Rebel Rebel. That finished really quickly. David Bowie from his eighth studio album Diamond Dogs, released as a single 2 months ahead of the album in February 1974.
Where was it recorded? Olympic Studios. Again, I can't believe it. We do not do this on purpose, do we?
No.
Well, there were some other studios involved, but primarily it was recorded at Olympic. And that studio must have been responsible for more great records.
You keep saying that. In fact, you know, what
do
we do?
It's almost a bit boring, really. I don't know, but we just can't help it. Anyway.
Well, it's just classic music, and there was a classic team at the time, and just people gravitated to a wonderful studio, and it was a beautiful time. So that.
Sorry, Dan. He produced that, though, didn't he?
He did.
David Bowie. And I think Visconti mixed some of it, which is interesting. But the guy who's really interested on this is a guy called Keith Harwood, because Keith Harwood engineered it, and he also engineered some of the Led Zeppelin stuff.
Oh, right.
I don't know whether you knew that, but no. Obviously from Olympic and stuff. But he was he engineered, and he died in a road accident, a car accident, and hit the same tree that Mark Bolan died in 2 weeks later. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Keith Harwood, yeah. So there you are. He's only 27.
What's going on there?
I don't know. Really weird.
That is really freaky, you know?
Isn't it? Yeah. But a great engineer, you know, and he just popped his clog. But same location. Absolutely incredible. But the lineup on that album, I love Diamond Dogs. I love the whole album, of the concept of it. It was post his Ziggy thing, wasn't it? And he came out of it into this sci-fi thing, you know, which was absolutely great. And I remember getting the record and I put it on, and the guitar is so great. It's great. And he plays guitar on this record.
Yeah.
So I think Earl Slick plays on a couple of tracks, but it's just great. The guitar, the riff is really, really good. And because he's not sort of, he can obviously play guitar. I mean, he's a really great multi-instrumentalist, David Bowie, but, you know, that riff, and I've played it, it is tricky because it's like an unusual thing. It doesn't sort of fit with a normal electric guitar riff. Anyway.
Well, Herbie Flowers is on the bass, you know, when I play it and I have my short scale.
Yeah.
And he's even more ploddy than I remember. You know, I was listening to it. It's really... Yeah. It's very muddy and sloppy, isn't it? It just has that kind of... Like an elephant playing a euphonium in mud. It has that kind of... Well, that's how it... It's just that weird thing. And what's interesting as well...
In because, mud?
Yeah, just as I was listening to the bass going again, oh, my God, it's even more sloppy than and muddy sounding than I remember it. But this is the first record in 5 years that Bowie hasn't had Mick Ronson playing on lead. So So in a way, it's like we're in a relationship with Bowie, aren't we? A musical relationship, and Mick Ronson and Olympic Studios, and it's like this whole family, and it's quite interesting. You go, okay, so think, we work together with someone for 5 years and then we go on and do another album and that person's not in the studio. Mm. Weird.
Must have been very strange, because Ronson used to do all the string arrangements, but on this one, Visconti did his string arrangements.
Yeah.
And it was Ainsley Dunbar on drums, who, of course, played... on The Hard Road with John Mayall's Blue Breakers, with Peter Green, on that fantastic record. And he went on to be in the Mothers of Invention with the mighty Frank Zappa. He played on the Grand Wazoo.
Great Googly Moogly.
Great Googly Moogly.
That's Pitt Campbell all over. Do you know what? I thank you for that, because he introduced he introduced Frank Zappa to me.
That's our youngest son, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know what, with David Bowie, this song was actually originally intended for a musical, Ziggy Stardust. It never happened.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And so, do you remember, and also just before David died, he actually was doing that musical in the West End, wasn't he, as well? I think it was the West End. I know that he'd written a musical.
Yeah.
Can't remember. So anyway, do you know, and before we go on to the next track... Right, name me three people who've covered that song.
You know, I actually don't know. Go on.
Neither do I. And it's really weird, right? Okay. Covered by Stevie Ray Vaughan.
No.
Yeah. Zig Zig Sputnik. Seriously.
I can imagine that, yeah.
And last but not least, the Bay City Rollers.
You know that I'm loving you. in a god of a feet, oh baby. Don't you know that her heart is the truth? Oh, won't you come with me and I'll take my hand? Oh, won't you come with me and I'll walk this land? Please take my hand. Let me tell you that in a god of you know that I'm loving you in a garden of Eden, baby. Don't you know that her heart is the truth?
Inagada da Vida, song from the 1968 album Inagada da Vida, In a Garden of Eden, that's actually what it means, which was the second studio album by Iron Butterfly.
Never heard of them.
Well, you know, I remember getting this record on vinyl, obviously not when it came out, because I wasn't listening to that sort of music, but I got into Atomic Rooster. And really, this whole thing, this whole organ thing, sort of started to get me interested and listen to it. But the great thing about this is that the keyboard player is using a Vox Continental. He's not using the standard Hammond. You can hear it's very hard and very acidic sounding. But it's got that sort of acid rock thing. And I'll tell you now that you will be humming that riff all night and all day tomorrow. It's a great riff. Super riff, you know? And even though they weren't British, it was a great riff. This from San Diego.
Yeah, what's going on there? This is so weird. I mean, I see orange and brown and I picture myself. I know exactly where I am in this kind of, you know, space. This music is so evocative of a period in time, isn't it?
It
really is. But what really freaked me out was when I'd never heard of this band before. And then I find out that it's among the world's 40 best-selling albums. They sold more than 30 million copies. And yeah. I'm thinking, I didn't know. And then I find out that the album version of this song is over 17 minutes long and occupies the whole of side B.
Yeah, well, I decided to play the single version. But the other thing about this, when we were researching it, I listened to a remastered version of this song. Now, whoever remastered it, firstly, needed to get their ears shringed, and also they need the fingers from stop to applying fiendish amounts of compression. It was unbelievably horrific. Horrific.
Do you know that's sad when that happens?
Because all you could hear, because when the vocals started, because the vocals are actually quite loud in the track, and when the vocals started, all the rest of the instruments just ducked right down in the background, and it sounded really weird. So I tried to find a version that was not compressed as much, and I think this is the original version, and it sounds okay, you know?
No, it's okay, you know, because Doug Ingle, who wrote the song, he said he hadn't intended for the album version to run for 17 minutes long. He just said he knew there'd be some slots for some solos. We've heard that before.
Sounds like one of our live gigs.
We played this gig on Saturday night over in Oldham in the UK. And it was great because it was like, there's usually this song and we play this one song pretty standard, don't we? And that was the first time you just did, and again, and it was, we just went off somewhere else for a few, like 24 bars. It was great. Great fun. I love that. So
well,
I really...
Johnny was doing a great solo and I thought, well, it needs to carry on because it was like, he was really going for it. And it seemed as though he was just going to calm down. And then he went even wilder on the second, like, you know, 12 bars. It was cool, yeah.
And what was really funny is I had a bet that the stage was set and there was a chaise lounge on chaise lounge on the stage. And it was like a multi-theatre music gig. And I got challenged to use the chaise in some way during our set. Now, I turn around at one point and you're stood legs astride on top of it playing your solo. And you git in my head. I was thinking, I can't do that now. So then when we did another song, it was when I sang Guilty, wasn't it? We were doing the solo at the end. And he turned around and I was lay on my back on it. Your face.
Like anyway. Something out of Bill Withers' band, isn't it? That lying down on the sofa. Yeah, but back to I Am Butterfly. I mean, they did incredibly well. And people say it's the epitome of heavy psychedelic excess, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it very drug-fueled. But if you think about it as well, 1968, this was about the same time that Led Zepp recorded Led Zepp 1. So, you know, the Yardbirds had just finished. And you know, I'm not going to mention it again, but I am. Fuzz guitar, loads of fuzz guitar, but very aggressive, very barky-sounding fuzz guitar.
Yeah.
Not sort of like the British fuzz guitar. It's quite a different sound, you know. But, you know, great band, great track, great album.
And what I'm finding out now as these shows progress is that the difference in the sound between America and, say, the UK has a lot to do with the technology that's available as well. As well, and also that cultural attitude, isn't it?
Feel.
Once Bitten, Twice Shy by Ian Hunter, released in April 1975 as a single from his debut solo album called Ian Hunter. It reached number 14 in the UK singles charts.
Great rock and roll record. Great. Really, really kicks it towards the end there. And who's on guitar?
I'm not telling you. Well, I know you know.
I know exactly who it is. It's obvious by listening to it in the solo. It's Mick Ronson, who also produced it. And fortunately, it was done at Air Studios.
Ah, not Olympic. No. Wow. Let's change it up, shall we?
Sir George Martin Studio, of course. Yeah. So, yeah, but it's, again, a great rock and roll. I love the lyrics in it. You know, get over your state line and my Les Paul heap. Some great little lyrics in there. And he's got that real cheeky sounding voice, hasn't he?
Yeah. Know? There's a bit of attitude in that song.
Very much so, yeah.
The weird thing is I don't really know Ian Hunter either. And I didn't know he was lead singer of Mott the Hoople. And because I don't really know much about Mott the Hoople. It's one of those bands that just kind of didn't come in on radar to me. But so they disbanded in 74, and this is his first album after Mott the Hoople disbanded.
Well, Nick Stevens, one of your ex-relations.
Yeah, ex-brother-in-law.
Ex-brother-in-law,
that's
still
right. Family, yeah.
Yeah, and Nick is married to the sister of Overend Watts, who was the bass player.
Yeah.
In Mott the Hoople.
Of course.
So there you go. So there you are, old Aaron Ross on wine, Herefordshire.
Herefordshire, I mind.
Yeah, there we are. Cider drinking hobbits.
Oh, I love it down there. It's great. Oh,
it's a great part of the world. I mean, it's the first time I'd really spent some time down there when I went down there for Linton Festival with you. Yeah. And we stayed with your sister Lorna, who's lovely.
And Andrew.
And Andrew, and we had a great time. But it's such a beautiful part of Britain, isn't it?
Well, no, I always wind you up because everywhere we go, there's like rolling fields of trees. It could be anywhere in the world. And I say, oh, this reminds me of Herefordshire.
Yeah.
And it was so nice to actually be in Herefordshire to be able to say the same thing to you as well.
Yeah.
When we were up in the UK this weekend and we were over near Skipton Settle, that's quite very, very similar.
Yeah, it is.
But here's another fact talking about Ian Hunter was that in late 1968, Mickey Most hired Hunter and Dufour to play in a band that was to be called the New Yardbirds. Now, that was a name that Jimmy Page would be using for his post-Yardbirds group before he discarded it in favour of Led Zeppelin. So this led confused fans to think that Hunter had been a member of Led Zeppelin.
Well, I didn't know that. That's amazing. And the drummer on that is a Dennis Elliott, he's called,
right.
And he ended up in Foreigner.
Really? Now I know Foreigner. This makes me feel a bit better.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I would say is that I don't know whether Mick Ronson had anything to do with it, but there's far too much kick drum in that. Is it like some double da-dums hits? And I think too complicated. Yeah, it's a touch too complicated. But it's a great rock and roll record. I love the guitar sound. And as I say, it's got such thrust, the track, and it sounds, you know, that someone who knows what they're doing has produced it, you know.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of, and it builds up, you know, hello at the beginning, you know, great.
There's one thing I want to know as well, is that when I looked at his later albums, and I'm sure we'll be playing more of his songs later on in different shows,
yeah.
But he's had loads of amazing musicians working on his albums, from Jaco Pastorius to Queen doing backing vocals.
For us, girl, it ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages and were pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants. This park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
Oh no.
I recall the yellow cotton dress foaming like a wave on the ground around your knees. The birds like tender babies in your hands, and the old man playing checkers by the trees. My carpet's park is melting in the dark. All the sweet green ice flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have the recipe again. Oh no. Arthur's Park is melting in the dark. All the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
MacArthur Park from the debut album A Tramp Shining by Richard Harris, a.k.a. Dumbledore.
Dumbledore.
Monsieur Dumbledore.
Si, oui.
From...
I can't believe. I didn't know he was a singer.
Well,
I had no idea.
You know, I'd forgotten. I didn't actually associate him, you know, with the... Because he was in the Wild Geese... I love his acting. I loved everything about Richard Harris. I know he was a you know, a heavy drinker and all that.
But he was alive. I
Oliver
felt like
Reed. You know, he's that type of guy. You know,
too
real
right.
stuff. You know, womanizer and stuff. But he, you know, what an incredible voice. And the reason why we're playing this today, we do actually have the single of this. I have got the single of it. Right, lurking in my singles collection. So it's true to us as normal. We have it on vinyl. But the reason why I played it is that the keyboard player that's going to be working with us at Wangaratta Festival in November, where we're headlining Saturday night, which is very cool, is a guy called Clayton Doley. And recently he did the arrangement and was the band leader for Jimmy Webb, who wrote this song. And he played it, and Clayton was playing on it at the Sydney Opera House. Isn't that incredible?
I can't speak. That is beautiful.
It is beautiful. And that's how it came around. I thought, Jimmy Webb, blimey. And then, as it happens, as I was looking, I then saw this very, very strange but fantastic video of Paul Shaffer and CBS Orchestra with Jimmy Webb, who were actually the CBS Orchestra, legendary orchestra. And the bass player, Will Lee, legendary bass player, was actually singing it with like a headset mic on. And he did a fantastic job. So I urge you to look at it on YouTube. We watched it. It's amazing.
I didn't know this guy. And right, so you've got this bass player there and he's got the Madonna Vogue mic in front of him. Yep. And I'm thinking, this looks a bit weird. And I didn't quite get it. So I watched with intrigue, really. And he's playing a beautiful, simple bass. And he's totally relaxed, totally on it. And I'll tell you what struck me with this guy is he hit every note beautifully. The emotion was incredible. And when he went up to, oh, no.
Yeah,
it
right
was,
at the very
it,
end.
It was so powerful, the emotion.
It's bloody high, that end bit.
It was absolutely superb. And if you were just looking at it, you've got to close your eyes and listen to the guy, because you can be put off by the Madonna mic or whatever. But it is a most beautiful piece of music. And this is what really... And this is weird, you know, because this song won a Grammy... MacArthur Park in 1969 for the best arrangement accompanying vocalists. So you can feel it, but do you know, just listening on the headphones here to that recording with Richard Harris, I'm wondering if it's been, if there are different days and different times that that they've comped the vocals when they've taken the beginning from one day.
I don't
because
think, yeah.
Well, I don't know. It just sounded different.
I
or is
think,
that just him warming up
I
into
think
the song?
When he's warming up into the song, because in those sort of days, it's mid to late 60s. I know they have multi-track machines, but they were using a big orchestra here. I think they recorded the whole bloody thing live.
And who was playing on the instrumentation? The Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew. Hal Blaine on drums. The mighty Hal Blaine. Amazing.
And there was Joe Osborne on bass guitar.
Oh, Joe.
And Tommy Tedesco.
Yeah, legendary guitar player.
Mike Deasy on guitars. Larry Netchell on keys. And Jimmy played on harpsichord.
Yep, that's right.
So this whole thing came about because, you know, I remember seeing Richard Harris in Camelot. I remember I've seen that film and I knew that he sang then, but he went to a fundraiser in LA, so the story goes, and Jimmy Webb was asked to play piano as some sort of background accompaniment to this fundraiser. And they met there and he said to, Richard Harris said to Jimmy Webb, I want to release a pop single. And he didn't take him seriously. Well, anyway, Richard Harris sent him a telegram saying, come to London, let's do a single together. And so he flew over and he played him a few songs. And apparently this was the last song that he played in MacArthur Park.
Well, it's a tour de force because the lyrics, I mean, you know, I don't know what the interpretation is. I haven't had chance.
Oh, it's literal. It's literal. It's about a love story in MacArthur Park. And it's all written about when a love story that took place in the park. So he saw a cake left out in the rain. He saw all these things. They were literally there. And he just describes them in the song. So it's actually...
Wow.
Yeah, because you can actually imagine rain pouring down on this cake, can't you?
But you don't get that level of commitment vocally, I don't think, these days. It's a beautiful vocal, you know? And he seemed to me like he sang, like he acted. He's very, very, you know, forthright and stuff. And it's recorded at Armin Steiner's Sound Recorders in Hollywood, wasn't it?
Yeah, obviously.
Need a big stage, a sound stage, because it's a big orchestra, you know?
Beautiful.
Jimmy Webb produced it. It's marvellous. What a marvellous record. You know,
we love Richard Harris.
We do. We love Jimmy Webb. We love Clayton Doley. I'm in the phone with this one across the hall. If you don't answer, I'll just ring it on the wall. I know she's there, but I just had a call. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. I heard your mother, now she's going out the door. Did she go to work or just go to the store? All those things she said I told her to ignore. Oh, why can't we talk again? Oh, why can't we talk again? Oh, why can't we talk again? Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. It's good to hear your voice, you know it's been so long. If I don't get your call, then everything goes wrong. I want to tell you something you've done all wrong. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. I have to interrupt to stop this conversation. Your voice across the line gives me a strange sensation. I'd like to talk, but I can show you my affection.
On the telephone by The Nerves, the original Hanging on the Telephone, just so you know.
Well, I didn't know that. This is something completely different, and we actually do not have this in our vinyl collection.
No,
but we have, of course, Parallel Lines by Blondie, who made it famous, who made the writer Jack Lee loads of cash.
Yeah, he did.
Loads of it.
Yeah, she did. They
barrel did loads of cash because he wrote it. Incredible.
I find it weird because I came across this song when I was just doing some research and I played it and I thought, oh my God. And I looked into it. It's like, oh my God, they're the originals, because we all think it's an original from Blondie, don't we?
He wrote another track that was on Paralyzed as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Will Anything Happen? Blimey. So the story is, right, so there's a band called The Nerves. They were a mid-1970s American power pop trio. They were based in LA starting off with. You had a guy called Jack Lee on guitar, Peter Case on bass, that rhyme, by the way, and Paul Collins on drums. And all three of them wrote and they sang. But they say the band was short-lived. And this is weird, though, because they were together for like 4 years. And in today's standards, that's actually really quite long.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but they were short-lived. But what was quite interesting is they only had one release, and this was their self-titled and self-released four-track EP in 1976.
The interesting thing is that the band actually, i.e. Blondie, virtually copied it completely because the guitar line's exactly the same. The vocal line is exactly the same. Blondie, you know, she sings it virtually to the letter, doesn't she? Mm. And on that, you can really hear it's just three instruments. Yeah. It's like because they're a trio, and you can hear the fact it's probably all recorded at once, except for that last chord, which I think was overdubbed, but we'll never know because we can't find anything about it. But it comes bang at the end, but I think that's overdubbed. But the rest of it is completely live, or it sounds it to me.
So do you know, I love that. I love that self-released four-track EP story.
Mm.
And they were actually notable for being the founding vanguard of the LA punk and pop scene. And later on, it eventually produced bands like The Knack, The Beat and The Plimsolls.
You can hear it, though, can't you? You can hear it's the beginning of it, you know. You could. It's a natural progression on to The Knack, you know, like My Sharona and that sort of thing. It's not a million miles away.
So what's interesting, though, so there's 2 years between them, the Nerve releasing their four-track EP and Blondie covering it. And they didn't get it into any charts or anything, and Blondie did.
Blimey.
I'm fascinated. I'm just so fascinated by the way that you can have music and some connects and some doesn't and somebody else covers it. I mean, this song's also been covered by L7, Def Leppard and Cat Power.
Hmm. But Jack Lee also wrote another big song, didn't he?
Come back and stay for good this time.
With old Pino really Palladino on bass. Fantastic. Paul Young and the fabulous Wealthy Tarts from his No Pal album. Great record, you know, and that was on it.
I saw Paul Young when I was in Jersey at Fort Regent in concert. One of my first early concerts, actually. Fascinated. You know when you're a teenager and you actually see real people, real musicians? Yeah. It's so magical.
It is.
You never forget it. Never. Tomorrow Night by Atomic Rooster from their second studio album, Death Walks Behind You, released in 1970. It was the band's first hit, you know. It spent 12 weeks in the UK charts and peaked at number 11.
Love it. Love Atomic Rooster. And if you've been listening to the shows before, you will know that it was the first album I ever bought in the hearing of Atomic Rooster. Great band. No bass player, though. We haven't talked about bass hardly at all this show, which is incredible, but lovely guitar player, lovely drummer, and Vincent Crane, who is, I would honestly say, he's probably one of the best British blues Hammond organ players, or Hammond rocker Hammond organ players, of all time. You know, I think he's better than Argent. I think he's better than a lot of these guys. John Lord, I mean, he had a special thing going on, but, you know, for the original Hammond sound, there was nobody to beat him. Great musician.
Yeah, I feel a bit sort of intoxicated by that song. I feel like I'm in a dream state. It's really, there's so many different sounds going in, and at the end it was all panned and it was all very trippy. It's quite beautiful. Now, talking about the bass, you know, when I talk about the bass and when you talk about the bass, right, you know how much I love it, and I don't want to go on and on about it. But what's interesting is the bass lines are played through a combination. This is what's on the notes as well. Everybody cites it all over the internet. The bass lines are played through a combination of strong left hand and foot pedal techniques coupled with special sound reproduction devices fitted in the Hammond.
Mm. Well, you know, whatever he was doing, because, of course, the Doors didn't have a bass player.
No, I know.
Yeah. Led Zeppelin, in a lot of instances, didn't have a bass player either because, you know, John Paul Jones used to play the Hammond and keyboard, you know. Absolutely fantastic record and really something that was quite different than the rest of progressive rock at that time. You can always tell it's them, you know, very, very distinctive sound.
It's like they say as well, it's like a must-listen album for the Hammond fans. If anyone likes their prog with a harder edge, it's not necessarily metal. I mean, this is often hailed as a classic of the prog rock genre, isn't it? And what's interesting, there's like an equal spotlight shared between the guitar and the organ, which is different. And it's the archetypal lineup, isn't it? With Vincent Crane, John DeCann and Paul Hammond. Because Carl Palmer had left to form ELP, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and Nick Graham had left to form his own band. And so he started over, didn't he, really? He had a new set of influences coming in. And just going back to the bass as well, you know, I'm thinking about this.
I knew it was going to come back to
the bass. I know, but I'm thinking about it because, you know, the way we work is that we serve the song. So if a bass is needed of a certain style, then that's when you play the bass. I don't have to be in every single tea party on the planet.
Well, I kind of get that.
And I really like the way that sometimes with the instrumentation, it creates something completely different. You haven't got the string texture when you play with the pedals. It's a completely different thing altogether. It's that frequency, but created with a different instrument. So that's fine, you know. I like this bit. And also, you know, I do play the triangle.
I know you do. Well, and of course, the band, I mean, the original band, you know, with all those guys, they used to use tubas, didn't they?
Yeah,
euphoniums.
Of course, and I play French horn, so I mean, you can use the instrument, any different instrumentation to give that kind of, that level, can't you? That low end kind of.
Yeah, but it's still not like the bass, is it, darling? No.
No.
And of course, this month you are in Bass Guitar Magazine, featured 2 pages in Bass Guitar Magazine.
That was the shock of the month.
Absolutely incredible. Congratulations. I'm very, very proud of you. It's a wonderful thing.
Thank you.
I mean, to actually get in a magazine, you know, is absolutely amazing. And it's all down to your tenacity. But I think your sound has got something to do with it. And the fact that you're so badass, you know? Wow. What a bass player. Anyway, congratulations, Dan. I thought I'd mention that. A bit sort of self-congratulatory here. But, you know, I think you really deserve that. And that's it. That is the end of the show.
It's gone too quick again. Right. So we better quickly talk about what we're going to play the show out with, which is fantastic. I love this. I love this song. It's by Jeff Wayne, Forever Autumn. It's from his debut album, Jeff Wayne's Musical Version of the War of the Worlds, released in the UK on the 9th of June in 1978. And it's an album that's the retelling of the famous story of the War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
Yeah.
So,
but the star of this track is Justin Hayward from the Moody Blues. You know how much we love the Moody Blues. You've listened to the show before. Absolutely incredible.
And do you know the original melody was written by Jeff Wayne in 69? It was actually for a jingo for a Lego commercial.
No.
Oh, yes. Yep, and these two guys as well, Vigrass and Osborne, who performed on the original jingle, they added lyrics to the song. So
no.
How obscure is that?
Well, that has ruined it for me now, because I think Justin does a great job on the vocal. And, of course, the guitar solo is marvellous, you know.
And before, let's set the context here, okay? It's this album spent 290 weeks in the UK album charts, okay? And it was the 40th best-selling album of all time in the UK in 2009, with over 2.5 million copies sold. And it was one of the first recorded on 48 tracks using two synchronized 24-track Studer A80s at Advision,
yeah.
Studios in London.
Terrible to sync up, two 24-tracks.
Exactly.
Ooh, nightmare.
Ah, so, and what I love about this as well, because there's such a legacy with all this, do you know about the original Orson Welles 1938 radio version of War of the Worlds?
I do.
When you do?
It caused panic.
It did.
That's right, because we thought it was actually happening when it was on the radio.
I know, and I think when you build up to it, it's that people were actually listening to, they were really worried about having another world war at the time. So, and the radio was really how they got all their news at the time. So apparently police started going into the studios when they were live broadcasting, trying to stop them from broadcasting, because it was just absolute mayhem, wasn't it?
Absolutely. But there we are.
But this is the musical version by Jeff Wayne. Oh, and we need, if you want to get in contact with us, you can find us on Instagram, which is Starlight Campbell, Twitter, at Susie and Simon, and Facebook.
And the show is available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio in the US. Please tell your friends.
For 3 days, I fought my way along roads packed with refugees, the homeless, burdened with boxes and bundles containing their valuables. All that was of value to me was in London. But by the time I reached their little red brick house, Carrie and her father were gone.
The summer sun is fading as the year grows old, and darker days are drawing near. The winter winds will be much colder now you're not here. I watch the birds fly south across the autumn sky, and one by one they disappear. I wish that I was flying with them. Now you're not here. Like the sun through the trees, you came to love me. Like a leaf on a breeze, you blew away. Autumn's golden gown, we used to kick our way. You always love this time of year. Those fallen leaves lie undisturbed now, 'cause you're not here. 'Cause you're not
suddenly leapt from house to house. The population panicked and ran, and I was swept along with them, aimless and lost without Carrie. Finally, I headed eastward for the ocean and my only hope of survival, a boat out of England.
Like the sun through the trees, you came to love me. Like a leaf on a breeze, you blew away. A gentle rain falls softly on my weary eyes, as if to hide a lonely tear. My life will be forever autumn, 'cause you're not here, 'cause you're not here.
As I hastened through Covent Garden, Blackfriars and Billingsgate, more and more people joined the painful exodus. Sad, weary women, their children stumbling in the street with tears, their men bitter and angry, the rich rubbing shoulders with beggars and outcasts. Dogs snarled and whined, the horses' bits were covered with foam, and here and there were wounded soldiers, as helpless as the rest. We saw tripods wading up the Thames, cutting through bridges as though they were paper. Waterloo Bridge, Westminster Bridge. One appeared above Big Ben. Never before in the history of the world had such a mass of human beings moved and suffered together. This was no disciplined march. It was a stampede, without order and without a goal.